is Common Sense Radio. Straightforward and no excuses.
All right. Come on now.
This is the Steve Gruber Show.
Call me crazy.
Ooh, yeah.
What I said was perfectly right and spot on accurate.
Boy's got a mouth like a cannon, always shooting it all.
Stop. Yeah, stop. I mean, you're way off script.
Got it in me. Gonna quit until it all comes out.
Hey, boy.
Yeah, you know, it's not cynical, it's common sense.
Pay attention to me when I'm talking to you.
I'm gonna rock the nation. Rock the nation.
Genuine, accountable, and raw. Here is Steve Gruber.
Hey, everybody, it's Wednesday. Thanks for climbing on board. Glad to have you awake and moving along with us. There are a lot of things we could cover today. We could talk about the election in New York. That's important. We could talk about criminal charges coming down in the Flint water fiasco. We will talk about those things. They're important. We can talk about the Earth Day barbecue coming up on Friday, where I'll be your host. But really, let's talk about something really official and important, which is Chick-fil-A has officially kicked off its big move into Michigan. I know that means a lot to you because it means a lot to me. You know, Ivy and I have, on more than one occasion, just about put the car in the ditch because we saw Chick-fil-A. Yes, we like it that much. And we're not fast food people to speak of. We just like Chick-fil-A. They broke ground in Lansing, the first of 20 or more restaurants that'll be here in the next 4 or 5 years in Michigan. Isn't it great? Yeah, next 4 or 5 years, 20 new Chick-fil-A locations all over Michigan. So I wanted to put the car in the ditch. I still wish they were open on Sundays, but hey, you can't have it all, so we'll just go with what we've got, right? All right. It is Wednesday here on the program, and Attorney General Bill Schuette is set to charge at least three people, sources say, associated with the Flint water crisis. The water investigation team expected to announce those criminal charges later today. Schuette and other officials have said that they will make a significant announcement regarding the investigation and internal sources leaking to just about everybody. Say that at least three people will be facing charges. In January, Schuette said he was appointing an ex-prosecutor, Detroit's former FBI chief, to join the investigation, creating a conflict wall between the state's inquiry and lawsuits targeting the state. 2 years ago, the state switched the Flint water supply from Lake Huron because the city of Detroit was gouging on the price to the Flint River, an interim step as Flint was developing its own water supply system from Lake Huron. As a result of not treating that water for pH levels, well, contamination, as you know, corroded the pipes, lead got into the water, spiked lead levels in the blood levels of children and others. Flint's Flint River has been the go-to backup source for water in Flint for decades. The water itself is not particularly any more or less contaminated than other rivers in the state. It's about average. Lake Huron's a better water supply. I mean, that is true. And they're getting that soon. But we do not know who's going to be charged. I can say this, that when the water supply was switched, it is federal law. You've heard me talk about this on the program before. It is federal law that the municipal water supply department, the Flint Water Supply Department and the Flint Water Plant were required by federal law to put anti-corrosives into the water to avoid exactly what happened. The annual cost of such treatment of water, which is akin to treating your swimming pool or your hot tub, if you will, for pH level, it's akin to that, would have been about $30,000 or $35,000 a year. Now we're into the tens of millions, maybe the billions of dollars of damage, because what happens is the pipes have a coating on them on the inside. When the pH level isn't right, it basically gets Well, it gets eaten off from there. Then you end up with lead levels in the water, making the water unpalatable, dangerous, in fact. And also by federal law, not only are you supposed to control the pH, put non-corrosives, anti-corrosives into the water supply, you are also supposed to have a written plan in place as to how you're going to conduct yourselves when it comes to anti-corrosives in the water. My guess is that somebody at the local level who failed to do these basic things required by federal law could be facing charges. There could be others facing charges in the Department of Environmental Quality. We'll have to wait and see. Meanwhile, there are lawsuits being aimed at the state and others. In one lawsuit, plaintiffs are seeking $150 million in damages on behalf of 31,000 Flint residents who pay their water bills and got lead-contaminated water in return. United States District Judge John Corbett O'Meara found that the residents had raised no federal issues, giving him no jurisdiction over the complaint, so that one didn't happen. Numerous members of Congress have called for Governor Snyder and Gina McCarthy, administrator of the United States Environmental Protection Agency, to resign over the crisis. That didn't happen. Gina, by the way, for her part, when the EPA was not getting involved, was making her rounds talking about the ever-dangerous global warming. So at least she had that figured out. At least she was on top of that. All right. In New York, we'll have more on that, of course. I think the press conference is at, what, 1 o'clock? Is it? Okay, I think it's 1 o'clock. Thanks. So we'll keep an eye on that. We'll have a lot more on that tomorrow. In New York State, Donald Trump picks up 61% of the vote. Almost 60% of women voters voted for Donald Trump. Hillary Clinton with a substantial win as well, picking up 58% of the vote to Bernie Sanders' 42. Sanders, however, screaming foul. Apparently about 3 million voters were disenfranchised when they registered as independents, unable to cast a ballot, unable to participate. Bernie Sanders has a legitimate complaint there. Nothing will come of it. Madam Secretary will continue to cruise, but Bernie Sanders could still win in places like California. It's not over for him. He is going to get a place on the podium. He is going to get a chance to speak. And honestly, for a guy who is a democratic socialist, not even a Democrat, not even a member of the party, to run for the party's ticket, if he comes up short, Bernie Sanders might be the strongest third-party candidate, well, since George Wallace, if he runs. The best showing ever by a third-party candidate was 27.5%. Teddy Roosevelt pulled off that feat back in 1912, carrying 6 states and 88 electoral votes. The president at the time, Taft, got 1 state and 8 electoral votes. You know, Bernie Sanders might consider it a third-party run. He's better positioned than most. We'll keep talking about it and much more straight ahead this Wednesday on the Steve Gruber Show.
Genuine Michigan common sense on display every day.
Good Lord, so soon? I was on the internet learning about anti-wrinkle cream. You know, at my age, I'm trying everything I can, you know. I want to look good for Earth Day coming up. Darn it. This pesky radio show. Oh, look, it's Julie Gunlock. She's my next guest here on the program. Julie, welcome back.
Thanks for having me. Am I on to talk about anti-wrinkle cream?
Well, why not?
I definitely need the super-powered, extra-strength stuff.
Yeah, we're here to talk about Henny Penny. Let's see. Chicken Little and the acorn that fell and the sky is falling.
Yes, that's my expertise.
Yes. Well, you know, by the way, too bad you don't live closer. Where do you live, by the way?
I live in Alexandria, Virginia, right outside the swirling cesspool
well, you
of
should,
Washington, D.C.
You should do the same thing we're doing. We're having a big barbecue rib cookout to celebrate Earth Day because nothing says Earth Day like charred animal flesh, we always say.
Yes, I will be turning all the lights on, driving, you know, the long way to, you know, every location I have to hit that day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm firing up the Beast on Friday, which
nice.
Is a 2001 Suburban. A little rusty, great tires, though, and in the winter... That son of a gun will go through just about anything. I'm telling you, the Beast will be fired up. And classic cars and Harley Davidsons, we know how to have an Earth Day party, I'm telling you what.
That's right. I prefer to celebrate human progress on Earth Day.
Human progress. Well, see, my Earth Day is celebrating the great bounty of the Earth.
Yeah.
It's not crying. I mean, okay, here's the question I've been asking my liberal friends that are Earth, you know, Earth Day tree hugger types. And this is a legitimate question, Julie, and you'll appreciate this. Okay. You hear about it all the time. Here's all these terrible things that are happening, doom and gloom, and we have to go to Paris conferences and all of this stuff. Give me one example from your life. Give me one example from your life where you can say, well, this is what I've seen from global warming. Anybody. Ask people. Just give me one example. I mean, did your lawn turn brown?
Right.
You know, anything. You know what they've got? They've got nothing. They can't come up with one empirical piece of evidence.
I do have one example. My neighbors have become so annoying. My neighborhood has become so annoying with this stuff. I mean, because of the fear of global warming, of climate change. So that is really just being annoyed constantly is really the only example I can think of.
How big is your fire? Do you have a fire pit at your house?
We do. It's not that big.
I would burn that thing daily. My God, I'd be out there burning pine so that the pine sap would drip from the sky.
You know,
pine pitch. I'm good that way. At any rate, you're here to talk about leaving your kids in the car, but don't let the FBI tell you otherwise. Well, what are you talking about here?
Yeah, I have a piece in a new online publication called Heat Street. Everyone should check it out. It's affiliated with the Wall Street Journal. It's a great new online sort of magazine. They do a lot of human interest stories. And so I wrote a piece a couple weeks ago. I was in my local grocery store, you know, it's hard to know where this big cabal of criminals are hanging out. Is it at the Whole Foods or at the Starbucks or at the local Chinese restaurant, you know, or the Michael's Craft Store? You know, it's your typical, you know, strip mall about a mile from my house. And my kids have been playing outside all day. They were tired and hot and sweaty. I needed to go in to get one thing, a rotisserie chicken. So I said, stay in the car, and my kids know the rules. I was in the store for maybe 10 minutes. When I came out, there was a man standing by my car. And, you know, I live right outside Washington, so lots of federal agency, you know, employees and federal agents and stuff like that live around here. And so as I got close to the car, and I had a feeling this is what was going to happen, he flashed up an FBI badge. And he said, I'm with the FBI, and you can't do this. And he points to my car. And I said, I can't do what? And he said, you can't leave kids in the car unattended. Now, the funny thing is, I've been writing about this for years. I've been writing about this whole issue for years and people being harassed. I'm a big follower of Lenore Skenazy, who is the founder of the Free Range Kid Movement. And actually, she helps parents who've been harassed or even brought up on charges. So I turned around to the guy and I said, I'm not doing anything wrong, and you better get away from my car if you don't want me to call the cops. My last line being, and I was so proud of myself because I was shaking. I was so nervous. But my last line was, why don't you go flash your badge to someone who cares? Because truly, what he did was so out of line. It was total harassment. I wasn't doing anything wrong, according to Virginia law. Now, as I say this, I do encourage everyone to go to freerangekids.com. She has a map where you can click on the map and find out if there's some stupid law in your state that prevents you from making the totally reasonable decision to leave a 9-5 and 7-year-old in a car with the windows rolled down on a 60-degree day for 10 minutes. So check your, you know, before you're going to be aggressive with law enforcement, make sure you check the laws in your state. But anyway, so I wrote up this piece. The FBI had no comment on this, and unfortunately I didn't get his name. But, you know, what really depresses me is that you can, you know, you've got that sort of the nosy neighbor problem of people saying, I'm going to call the cops on you because what you did was wrong. But you can't even count on law enforcement to know the rules and to know the laws and to know the fact that, one, I didn't do anything illegal, but two, I didn't do anything unreasonable at all. So anyway, I gave this guy a good talking to, and I hope that my aggressive stance, my lack of contrition, really makes this guy think twice before he harasses a mom for making a completely reasonable decision.
Okay, breathe.
I know. a little upset about this.
Listen, counseling is only $200 an hour. I think it's important that we got your feelings out today. I think it's important we were able to explore your feelings.
I feel better.
Yes, I think that's important. Now, later that same evening, while trying to make bail, Julie was contacting all of her friends. I don't disagree with you. Of course, this sort of thing got a lot of public. It was put on display when that woman had her two kids picked up that were what, 6 and 8 or whatever they were.
Yeah, my Mitev family, right in Silver Spring, not far from here. Yes, but you know what people often conflate, and what frankly law enforcement is conflating, is the truly horrific case of parents forgetting their kids are in the car. Now, in that case. In those cases, there's no choice being made.
While at the boyfriend's house snorting cocaine,
okay,
of course.
Okay, well, obviously I'm not talking about that either. Or the woman who goes in to try out for her a stripper. Yeah, I heard that story recently. She left her little girl in the car.
Listen, she needed the money. Come on now. You got 10 seconds for the last word. Plug it where they can find it.
Find me at IWF.org. I've been published in a lot of places, but that's the central location.
You, stay off the coffee. Julie Gunlock, always a pleasure.
Thanks for having me.
There you have it. Good God. She's a little wound up, you think? Good for her. You're listening to The Steve Gerber Show.
Getting your day started with news from around the state and around the world. Common Sense Radio. This is The Steve Gerber Show.
All right, my friends, it is Wednesday, and coming up Friday, Earth Day. Go to the Steve Gerber Show Facebook page, find out about that special get-together that you'd like to be a part of. You know, if you're within driving distance, should be a good time, should be fun. You should enjoy it. And who better to celebrate Earth Day with than, you know, some tree hugger like myself. We'll just leave it at that. Ben DeGro, our next guest from the Mackinac Center, Director of Education Policy there, talking about why schools keep ignoring teacher effectiveness when it comes to setting their pay. Ben, welcome to the program.
Hey, good morning, Steve.
As the son of a school teacher, a woman who I still run into people today that tell me she was the best teacher they ever had, and I said, yeah, you never lived with her. I'm joking, of course. But my mother taught fifth grade for 30 years. My grandmother taught for more than 40 years. I come from a teaching family, and it seems to me those that, you know, have an effect on children, like my mother did apparently, and talking to, you know, so many students years after the fact, shouldn't those be the teachers that benefit from excelling in their field?
Absolutely. We have a system here in Michigan and most states where we call it the single salary schedule, and teachers are just getting paid based on
years
in the classroom and, you know, a few credentials, and it's really under rewarding those teachers who are really doing a great job.
So we have a wonderful socialist system of it doesn't matter, you know, who's better, who's worse. They all pay the same. You've been here this long, therefore you get the promotion, you don't. That's a lousy way to run anything.
I mean, absolutely, but it's a top-down government system that doesn't have much incentive to provide efficient and effective education, and therefore doesn't see the need to recognize and reward the best teachers, and so paying them all the same is kind of the path of least resistance.
Yeah, the path of least effective thought. I mean, because we all know this. I don't know how old you are, but you know, when I went to school and in college. Back then, there were certain teachers you knew. If you walked up and said, listen, Mrs. Jones, I'm having some trouble here. And she'd say, well, stay after class. We'll go over it. We'll figure it out. And then there were other teachers like, well, yeah, no, if you want to come after school, you can find a tutor, this and then people that kind of blew you off. I mean, there was people that would actually help you because they actually had a legitimate, I don't know, emotional commitment to the children, if you will. And then there were those that didn't. My mother, for example, taught literacy to kids who couldn't read and write very well during summer vacation. She'd have them at her house. She never took a nickel from any of them because she knew that if they couldn't read and write, they'd have a lousy life. So her teaching extended into the summer months because literacy was her thing. And that's always had an impact on me about doing the right thing and helping those because you're going to help them have a better life. Those are the teachers that I want to identify with.
Right, the teachers who go above and beyond, like your mom, like those you describe, put in the extra effort and actually have a visible, measurable impact on what students are learning and what they're preparing them for life, and they're getting paid the same as the teacher who's just checking in, clocking in, putting in their time. We have the tools now in education to do a lot better in distinguishing the great teachers from the mediocre teachers from the ones who shouldn't be there.
And so that sounds great, but you and I both know that two things stand in your way. One, the Michigan Education Association, and two, the National Education Association, and maybe the American Federation of Teachers. These three things stand squarely in your way of doing, well, frankly, the right thing. How do you get around it?
There's the big question. So you're right. The issue is collectively negotiated contracts where the union gains and retains power by holding the power over how teachers are paid and making sure all teachers are essentially treated the same regardless of their quality. That's the union's foothold. That's the union's power at the local level. And even at the state level, where several years ago the governor and the legislature here passed reforms like merit pay and improving teacher evaluations, but watch how difficult it's been to get them implemented correctly at the local level because of unions.
Yeah, so you can't get there because all of this nonsense. You're privatizing education and you're taking the control away from the classroom and all this other nonsense. At the same time, you have these unions that have created an environment where you see this on the news all the time, where teachers are getting, punched in the head, knocked down, dragged around because they can't defend themselves. They can't restrain a student who is completely unruly in the classroom and creating problems. Our teachers have no control over the classroom because of all this liberal thinking. You can't touch the kid. You can't say anything bad. We don't want to hurt Johnny's feelings, of course. Meanwhile, Johnny's ruining the education for 29 other kids in the class. It's chaos. I mean, the inmates are truly running the asylum.
Right. I mean, you're pointing out that the problem is bigger than just the existence of unions. It's, the threat of litigation and ineffective management and all sorts of things that help prop up the union and give them the power to enforce things like collective pay and single salary schedules.
Yeah. So, all right, where do we start? And we're on the line here with Ben DeGroe from the Mackinac Center's Director of Education Policy. Ben, we've got to do something. We've got to do better. We know our schools are not doing as well as we would like them to. I'm not going to say they're failing schools, but they're not doing as well as many of us would like. I think that's safe to say and fair to say. How do we improve education? How do we move things forward? And is there a way we can reward good teachers?
I mean, there definitely is ways we can reward good teachers. There are some local school districts who are doing a good job in this area, but they're the exception, not the rule. To get to a higher quality education system requires one that's going to be more responsive to the demands that parents and local communities have for change, and that means putting the power in the hands of parents, giving them more choices. Ultimately, taking the power and the funding authority away from the bureaucrats and putting it in the hands of parents. That's one big tool to get us toward a better system.
Well, Ben, I appreciate that, and if you could keep up the good fight. We greatly appreciate it. I greatly appreciate you being on the program today.
Yep. Thanks very much, Steve.
All right, Ben. Thank you so much from the Mackinac Center. It's 52 after the hour on this Wednesday morning. We'll be right back on the Steve Gruber Show.